Yeah, one of the things that it reminded me of was that when we're involved in this kind of experience, there's actually a chance to have those kinds of conversations and reflect on things and then come back and share together as a group. And, you know, that happening over 3 or 4 days is a really special thing. Often we miss that in church because you might have a wonderful message being preached and, you know, I know you guys have question and answer kind of stuff at the end of the sermon, which I've been involved in, which is great. But you then sort of go away and get involved in life and come back a week later and it's, you know, kind of lost. So it's a really special opportunity. But I thought in light of that, I might just share not specific conversations that I had, but what I noticed as I talked with people and people talked with me was just some themes and some thoughts that came out of what we shared yesterday. And I thought it might be just helpful to gather those together. One thing that was interesting, you know, we talked about Psalm 1 painting that picture of the right way and the wrong way, so to speak, or, you know, God's way, if you like, and the way that's not God's way. And then a number of people yesterday were talking in different ways about how they reconcile that with the life that they live and the reality. You know, we talked about the difference between the ideal and the real. And I guess as I reflected on that, I thought, you know, there aren't any simple answers to the dilemma of if we choose to live God's way, if we choose to live the right way in life, that there's a guarantee that everything will turn out, because we all know that that's not the way life actually works. And there aren't any simple answers to that. But I think one way of responding to Psalm 1 is to think about it in terms of ideal and real, like I was suggesting yesterday, and to appreciate what God has created us to be and think about that. I find for myself personally that sometimes I don't spend enough time thinking about what is the kind of person that God has created me to be. Firstly, as a human being, which is something that, that applies to all of us because we're all human beings, but also specifically me. What has God created me to be and how do I reflect on that? The other thing that we talked about was the that combination of Psalm 1 and 2, you know, and the right way and the wrong way, and then this idea of the sovereignty of God. And a word that I like to use, and this came up in a few conversations as well, is what do the Psalms actually offer to us? And the word that I like to use is the word language, that the Psalms actually offer us a language or a way of speaking about a whole lot of different things. What we talked about yesterday, lament. So lament psalms give us a language. They give us a way to speak about the sorrow that's in our heart and the struggles that we have. Today we're talking about and focusing on thanksgiving. And, you know, Erica led us in a beautiful time of worship just before morning tea, helping us to reflect on what it means to be thankful and how we understand that, how we express that. And, you know, it amazes me actually how often, you know, we just had, I think, one email between us. You emailed me and said, what are you talking about? I think you're talking about this. You know, and I sent back a short email, and it's amazing how it's dovetailed so beautifully into what I'm sharing this morning. But that languaging aspect, and I think that was, again, something that comes through a number of conversations I had yesterday, that we see these psalms and we might even read them and use them, but, you know, what do they actually give to us? What's their purpose? And that may not be their only purpose, but I think that is a primary purpose, to give language to the experience that we have. Quite a few people, those of you who came down to the Bush Chapel and shared in the ritual with the candle, and you'll notice I've got, some of you can't see it, but that's what we had there yesterday. You'll notice the candle's out today. That's not it. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But there was a candle in there, and we shared some people actually shared their lament. Some people symbolically shared their lament by pouring some sand into the vase. And again, I had a number of conversations with different people about the significance of that. One of my laments the evangelical setting of the church, which I guess, you know, I'm making an assumption here, but I guess this church sits broadly in the evangelical context of the Christian church, is that we have we've lost a sense of ritual and symbol. Chris and I are part of the Australian Academy of Liturgy, which is made up of mainly of Anglicans and Catholics and Uniting Church people. And it's a wonderful experience to hear them talk about ritual and hear them talk about symbol and the significance of colours and architecture and all sorts of things. And we seem to have lost that. And there's something, I mean, how simple can you get? Just pouring a bit of sand into a vase. And yet that's a very powerful thing for some people. It's putting something physical to the stuff that's in the heart and the mind. And it's a very powerful thing. And a number of people found that very helpful. I like to use three terms or three words that, for me, sum up what we're doing when we engage in a ritual. We've engaged in other rituals today. You led us through not a ritual that we would repeat over and over, but it was a ritual of acknowledgement, thankfulness, acknowledging God's presence, all those kinds of things. The three words that I like to use are event, something takes place, something happens. And as a result of that happening, we are often prompted to spend time reflecting on that and thinking about what that event was about. It's what we're doing at Easter time, isn't it? And as a result of that, or out of that, can come a sense of meaning-making or making sense of what actually happened. You know, probably as I say that, you're thinking about events that have happened in your life, good events, positive events, tragic events, sad events that have taken place. And when that happens, it often almost forces us actually to stop and think, what actually happened there? And as we do that, we then enter this process of trying to make sense of what took place. I don't know about you, but my experience in church, I think I said yesterday, you know, I've grown up in church, I've been in church, or I often say church has been in me more longer than I've been in church, kind of thing. And one of the things I've noticed is that we find Easter Saturday or Holy Saturday difficult to deal with. It's kind of like, what do you do with it? We kind of know what to do with Good Friday because Jesus died. We definitely know what to do with Sunday because Jesus rose again. But what do we do with that day in between? And I sometimes thought to myself, why did Jesus stay in the grave so long? I'm sort of presuming there that if God raised Jesus from the dead, as the scriptures tell us, then God could quite easily have brought Jesus back to life immediately after he died, within moments, within nanoseconds. Why is there this space between? And I think you mentioned that, Erica, in our time before. What would the disciples have been thinking about during that time? Would they have been sad? Would they have been eulogising Jesus, as you said? We don't really know. In fact, it was interesting, when I was thinking about this and preparing this, I was actually looking again at the Gospel stories, trying to find something in there that talked about what was happening on Easter Saturday. And I couldn't find anything. There's really just nothing there until we get the story of the women going to the grave and the subsequent discovery of the resurrection. We get a little bit of theological stuff later on about what was happening in that period of time, but in terms of the story, there just doesn't seem to be anything there. And as I thought about that and wondered why that was, I thought, well, is this intentional? Was this intentional on God's part, perhaps, to leave that space to allow time to do the kinds of things Erica was talking about, to remember what Jesus was like, to remember what Jesus had done, to do what I was suggesting with my little three-word phrase there, to experience the event of the death of Christ, to stop, to reflect, and to begin to make meaning out of that. I don't know, because I guess we never will, but I wonder if Jesus had risen immediately, whether the disciples would not have had such a wonderful opportunity to make meaning out of the death of Christ. So that sort of came out of some of the conversations yesterday, more related to lament, but it sort of, if you like, threads into, I think, what we want to talk about today. The other thing that, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention as well. And that is, you may be familiar with the phrase liminal or limen. If you're not, a limen is the Latin word for the threshold as you walk through a door. And the idea is that as you step over the limen, you're not, if you stepped across the doorway over there, there's a moment where you're not outside but you're not inside. You're kind of in between the two spaces. And that's how I think of Holy Saturday. It's a liminal space. It's that space where we're not in death any longer, in a sense, because that event has taken place. But we're not in resurrection either, because we either, for the disciples, they either didn't fully comprehend what resurrection meant, or even if they were anticipating it, it still hadn't actually happened, so they were kind of waiting. And again, you know, what Erica led us through this morning was, in one sense, a lovely opportunity to just pause in that liminal space. To not feel, in fact, I don't think you even mentioned the word once, resurrection. To not be rushed to move beyond where we are. I guess that's my dilemma as I look back over my experience of church over 50 odd years, that we've been very quick to move to resurrection. And we've been very hesitant to just stop in that liminal space between. So we are this morning, or I'm encouraging you to this morning, to see Holy Saturday as a liturgical space that is a liminal space. It's a space that's not yet at that point of resurrection. And one of the things that can fill that space, that liminal space, is thanksgiving, or eulogizing. Thanksgiving in the case of Easter, which we're celebrating now, thanksgiving for Jesus and what Jesus has done, the life that Jesus led, but also thanksgiving in a personal sense, and we expressed some of those things earlier today. I want to focus on Psalm 116 a little bit today, which is one of the psalms that we had read to us earlier. But before we do that, just a few thoughts that might help you to think about thankfulness. I've just, at the top of the sheet that I'll give you out, I've just got a very short quote which says, "Today, I am thankful." That's all it says. It's very simple, it's very short, but it's quite profound, really. "Today, I am thankful." What does it mean to be thankful? I just pulled out a couple of quotes that to me encapsulate the idea. Marcel Proust said that, "Let us be grateful, or let us be thankful to the people who make us happy. They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom." I wonder who the gardeners are in your life, and the gardeners of your soul, the people who till the soil in your life, the people who plant the seeds in your life, the people that you can be thankful to and thankful for. Meister Eckhart said, "If the only prayer you said was thank you, that would be enough." Again, simple, short, but quite profound. I think, and I haven't read the context around that quote, but I think what Meister Eckhart might be alluding to there is that we actually often don't think to say thank you to other people or to God. One of the things that I love about Psalms like some of the ones we've read this morning, including 116, is again, they give us a language for thankfulness. Do you find our culture is a thankful culture, generally speaking? Mm-hmm. Not really, is it?
On the surface.
On
the surface.
Yeah. In a very fairly superficial sort of way, perhaps. But yeah. But that deeply meaningful thankfulness is probably missing, and I certainly know it's missing for me. I don't think I'm as thankful as I could be or ought to be. And what's the effect that has? If you know, I'm sure as well as I do, that when someone does express a deep thankfulness to you, that's actually it has quite an effect for the person receiving that. The last one is a quote by A.A. Milne, who said this: "Piglet noticed that even though he had a very small heart, it could hold a rather large amount of gratitude." I like that. Even though he had a small heart, it can hold a large amount of gratitude. So what I want to ask you to do, or invite you to do today, is to take an opportunity to reflect like we did yesterday. I'm not going to send you off, we're going to do it here in this space today. As I said to you earlier, we've got my favourite vase here, and in case you weren't at the Bush Chapel yesterday and missed it. But the reason this is significant for me, this vase, is because, as you can see, it's made up of a whole lot of little broken pieces of glass. And it just reminds me that as human beings and as communities, we're broken individuals, we're broken communities. But one of the wonders of the death and resurrection of Christ, and not just the death and resurrection of Christ, but the whole life and ministry of Christ, was that his focus was on putting broken people and broken communities back together. And that, for me, that this symbolises that while we live in a state of brokenness, we actually are a part of a process of that brokenness becoming wholeness, shalom, if you like, which is a completeness or a wholeness that God brings about. So, thinking and reflecting today on what is it in Jesus' death on the cross that you can be thankful for personally, and how you might show that thankfulness in your life. One of the interesting things about worship is that worship to a large degree is about thankfulness for what God has done. And if you look at the old English word from which we get worship is worthship, which is talking about how God is worthy of our thanks and our praise. But the Hebrew and the Greek actually the word means to work or to serve. And so it just reminds us that it's actually in our working and our serving that we show our thankfulness to God, not just in our words. So there are a few things here. What I'm asking you to do is to reflect on a couple of questions and then spend a few moments reading through, hopefully you've got your Bibles with you, reading through Psalm 116, which we had read to us earlier today, but I'd just like you to read it silently to yourselves. And then after I've given you a few minutes to do that, I'm just going to ask you to break into groups of maybe into pairs or perhaps threes or fours, and just spend some time sharing with those people in that group the things that you're thankful for. And they may be things that you're thankful for related to the Easter story particularly. They may be things that you're thankful for in your family or your the relationships that you have, your work context, whatever, but things that you are thankful for. And then I'm going to ask you to, we might just come back together, well, we'll be here in the same room, but we'll just regather as a group. And then I'm going to ask you as a closing thing to go and do something, and that'll just lead into lunch, so we won't actually come back together again. So I'll give you the sheet out and see how we go.
Just reiterate the process now.
Sorry?
Just reiterate the process.
Yeah, I will do. Yeah. Oops. Hopefully there's enough there. I think there will be. Okay, so just to reiterate then, just now you've got it in front of you there. So, under opportunity for reflection, I'll put those quotes there just for you to have and to reflect on if you want to. There are those two questions there. What does Jesus' death on the cross remind you to be thankful for, and how might you show that thankfulness in your life? And then once you've thought about those questions for a little bit, you might want to write down some of your responses or just think about what they might be. And then I'm just asking you to spend a few moments focusing on things that you can be thankful for and some time in silent prayer to intentionally thank God for those things. Then read through Psalm 116, and I'll give you a few minutes to do all of this, and then when I sort of see people getting a bit restless, I'll say to you, let's get into groups of twos or threes or fours and share those things. So there you go. Spend a little bit of time in personal reflection on that. When you're ready, you might like to get into a group of three or four. If you're not ready, that's okay. You can keep on reading through the psalm and just join a group when you are reading. I just put on there, introduce yourselves if you don't know one another, because there might be some here who doesn't know everyone in their group. And just invite you to focus on two particular things. What do you notice the psalmist is thankful for? This is this languaging thing. So finding a language for thankfulness, one way we can do that is to see what kind of language, what sort of things the psalmist says in thankfulness to God. And you might want to share a few things that you're thankful for personally as well with people in your group. And then spend a bit of time praying for each other, giving thanks for each other, giving thanks for the things that people are giving thanks for. Because we, in that sense, we can language one another. We hear other people giving thanks. It helps us to discover a language of thankfulness as well. So there you go. When you're ready, get into groups of three or four. And I'll call you back into a bigger group in a little while.